Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the 15 Minute Book Club with me, your host, David Wares. Every week we take a 15 minute look at all things book related. Whether it's a review, a question, an interview, a classic, a bestseller, a focus on a particular writer or genre or theme or whatever, we're all about the written word. And we're kicking off this week's edition with the question, when do you read? At what time of the day do you read? And this isn't a silly question because a lot of things we do are habitual. And if you take away the habit, you take away the practice too. So the time or times of day when you read are important to your reading habit. And it is a habit. It's a good habit, but it's a habit. And equally, if we look at when you read, it tells us something about why you read. For example, do you read before bed? Is the act of picking up a book likely to make you fall asleep about 15 minutes later? Is reading the thing you do to wind down, to relax, to put a full stop to the end of the day? And does that fact influence the choice of your reading material? Alternatively, do you read while commuting on the train or the bus as a prelude to the daily grind? Or do you listen to audiobooks as you drive? I saw a thing on YouTube the other day where an American Army tank commander said he listened to audiobooks as he travelled towards the battle. It took his mind off the stresses and fears. I'm not saying that reading leads to war, well, not always, or that it's a bromide for PTSD, but the question stands, when do you read? Do you read at work? Do you read at lunchtime? And if so, does that 15 or 20 minute time out just you and your book, does it allow you to recharge? And is reading, in fact, possibly, maybe, an aid to digestion? And on that topic, do you read in the the bathroom? Or do you read on an evening over a glass of wine? Or like me, do you read on and off all day? Or maybe even you just never have time to sit down and read a good book. Get in touch and let us know your reading habits, either through the website or via my direct email at jazzpunk101@protonmail.com. I'll read out the best answers in future episodes. But the question stands, what time of day do you read? When? You don't have to send us in a clock, but you can tell us. Okay, moving on to the book focus of this week. I'm going to begin with this quote. When the lives of individuals and communities are controlled by powers that themselves remain uncontrolled, slavers, czars, führers, first secretaries, marshals, generals, generalissimos, ideologists of dictatorships at either end of the spectrum, then creative energy becomes a protest. That's from the introduction to a book called The Bass Saxophone, this week's book of the week by Joseph Skvorecki, Skvorecky, a Czechoslovakian who, as a young man, had the distinctly unpleasant experience of living under both fascist and communist dictatorships. This week's featured book is probably one you haven't read, although I'll give you a round of applause if you have. But to be fair, I'd never heard of it until recently. I was given it by a pal as part of a job lot of books and information about saxophones. He'd gone through a phase of learning to play, but he decided to focus more on his main instrument, which is the bass. So he's getting rid of a lot of stuff. And this book is called The Bass Saxophone, but it's not really about saxophones, bass or otherwise. It's not really about music. It's about freedom. The book contains two short stories preceded by a fairly long introduction that sets the scene. And it sat on my shelf for quite a long time, unread by me, while I did my usual thing of devouring many, many cheap, badly written action thrillers, because that's my comfort food. That's my very guilty pleasure. But on a whim, I picked it up and began to read it. And unlike most books, I actually read the introduction too. And as it turns out, this week's book focus is actually about the introduction to the book, not the stories within. This week, we're actually talking about the introduction to an out-of-print book you haven't read by somebody you've never heard of, which, to be honest, is not an easy sell. But I would recommend that if you can get hold of it, you can get a copy secondhand on Amazon, and I'm sure there'll be bookstores out there with a copy somewhere, and I would recommend that if you can read it, you do. But it's not in print. To be fair, if anybody wants a copy, get in touch with me and I'll pass it on, because it is a book worth sharing. But I can only pass it on once to whoever gets in touch first. Okay, so question, why is this book worth reading? A book ostensibly about an extremely unusual musical instrument written by a man from Czechoslovakia that both you and I had never heard of. Well, that's what this feature is going to discuss, because it's all about freedom. Freedom to act, freedom to speak, freedom to listen to and play music, freedom to sing, freedom to dance, freedom to think. The irrepressible freedom that dictators everywhere and throughout history have attempted to suppress but can't. As the author says on page 20 of the introduction, writing about music that could not and still cannot be eradicated. Anonymous people hold underground Woodstocks in the same old obscure hick towns, gatherings often ruthlessly broken up by police, followed by the rest of participants, their interrogation, their harassment. All the joys of living in a police state. It's not that many years ago in the UK, there were underground raves that were ruthlessly broken up by the authorities, who could not stand to let people enjoy uncontrolled, unmonitored, unregulated fun. And it's worth remembering that the word police isn't just a noun that refers to those people who drive around in striped cars wearing black body armour. Police is a verb too. It means to control, to regulate, to monitor, to enforce. Anyway, let's get back to the book, let's backtrack. The author, Joseph Skvoreky, had the unusual experience of growing up under two dictatorships, one from both extremes of the political spectrum, the fascist regime that invaded from Germany in 1939, and then the communist regime that invaded from Russia 6 years later. Both regimes thrived on limiting freedom. Indeed, both regimes could only survive by limiting freedom, because if anyone could choose, they choose an entirely different political system. Both regimes censored speech. They both censored music. They both censored every aspect of human experience and human interaction. One was fascist, the other was communist. Both were totalitarian. That is, they were in complete control and they governed every aspect of life. There was no private sphere. Everything and everyone belonged to the state. And the experience of the author taught him there was little or no difference between the two systems. And here's the thing, in both regimes there were people who were happy to, willing to in fact, act as the censor, act as the moral arbiter of your behaviour and your thoughts. There were a lot of people in these murderous, censorious regimes who enjoyed punishing the behaviour of others. There were people just like you and just like me. Then there are people right now in this country who would happily volunteer to control your behaviour. You probably know some of them. Skvoreky described the fate of a talented female singer who, after a pause of some years of study, returned to the stage and dared sing songs that were banned by the government. It was an old swing tune, and while Inka's sense of rhythm had remained, her vocal range had doubled, and she was rewarded by thunderous applause, gave them an encore, and this time sang one whole chorus in scat. The applause was endless. When I stumbled off stage, she told me years later, I thought, I've made it again. But there was a guy there in one of those blue shirts, you know. I think they call them the Young Guards, all scowling and furious. And he yelled at me, that's it, out. I can assure you, you'll never sing another note in public. And in fact, that's what happened. They didn't even let me sing after the intermission. The blue shirt was the uniform of the Czechoslovakian Union of Youth, a political offshoot of the dictatorship that controlled and monitored everyone. And it's worth understanding that there are people in every country who are happy to enforce draconian laws. Blue shirts, brown shirts, black shirts, all different coloured shirts. If it gives them a shred of power, they will wear any colour they can grab hold of. You think they wouldn't, but they would. For example, when East Germany collapsed in 1989, when the records of the secret police, the hated Stasi, opened, it turned out that 1 in 3 of the population at some point spied on and reported their neighbours to the police for an infraction of the rules. Somebody even reported family members. Everyone likes to think if they lived in a Star Wars universe, they'd join the Rebel Alliance. Everyone thinks they'd be Luke Skywalker or Han Solo. Or at the very least, they'd be an Ewok. They'd be part of the Resistance. But the fact is, most people never do join the Resistance. Most people quietly put up with it and get on with their lives as best they can. And some, often quite a few, choose to join the evil empire because it's easier, because the pay is better and there are perks, because the uniforms are cool, because they enjoy the power, because the system constantly reinforces and rewards that feeling of virtue they get, the feeling of virtue that these political commissars enjoy. So the book, The Bass Saxophone, is not, as I've already said, about a bass saxophone. Not really. It's about the freedom manifested, in this case, by music. The human drive towards expression and connection. And it's also a comment on that other bass human drive, which is to control, to shame, to silence and punish, and in extremis to eradicate. As an avid reader myself, a fairly workmanlike musician, and a huge lover of freedom, I'm a big supporter of free speech, the written word and music. But I'm also very aware of the historical tendency towards censorship of all of those things. For example, going back a bit, in medieval England, we had rules that even controlled what clothes you were allowed to wear. Back then, poor people were not allowed to dress well. Simple as that. If you did, you were punished. Imagine in this country right now, if you could be jailed for wearing Adidas. Though there are some people that would argue that's entirely just punishment for wearing sportswear outside of the gym or the football pitch. But in those days, people were not allowed to eat certain foods either on pain of death. They were not even allowed to travel beyond the boundary of their parish or manor without permission of the Lord. And centuries later, Oliver Cromwell, the self-appointed law protector of England, banned Christmas and buttons. In Eastern Europe, during the Cold War, a war that ended just 30 years ago, citizens were not allowed to express their thoughts without fear of the gulag. In China right now, you cannot criticise or complain about the government or you will be jailed. And imagine that in the UK, if it was a jailable offence to complain about the government, we'd all be in chokey. Recently in Afghanistan, a comedian called Kasia Zwan was executed for the crime of telling jokes. And again, imagine if someone took out one of the Chuckle Brothers and just shot them for being funny. Well, for being a little bit funny. Imagine if somebody executed Ricky Gervais for being funny and controversial. Or Russell Brand for fighting a man dressed as a horse in a comedic manner. Well, they aren't executing comedians in Britain yet, but they are starting to give them criminal records and jail sentences and things like that. So, I mean, at this very moment, the government, when not criminalising comedians, is talking about banning hate speech. That's great, I hear you. That's only right. Hate is a terrible thing. Hate speech is a terrible thing, and I agree. But who decides what hate speech is? That kid in the blue shirt who decided that Inga's singing was hateful and stopped her from ever singing again? The Taliban who decided that Kasia Zwan's comedy was hateful and executed him in the most awful manner? Oliver Cromwell, who decided that Christmas was hateful, and so were buttons. The point is, be careful of who you give the power to define words such as hate, and who you give the power to send people to jail, because it's unlikely they'll will the power as promised, and it's even less likely that they'll hand it back. There are people who will gladly enforce the rules, no matter how unfair, no matter how ludicrous, no matter how damaging those rules might be to the human experience, and worst of all, they'll tell you they're doing it for your own good. As C.S. Lewis put it in God in a Dock, Essays in Modern Theology, of all tyrannies, a tyranny sincerely exercised for the good of its victims may be the most oppressive. It will be better to live under robber barons than under omnipotent moral busybodies. The robber baron's cruelty may sometimes sleep, his cupidity may at some point be satiated. But those who torment us for our own good will torment us without end, for they do so with the approval of their conscience. They may be more likely to go to heaven, yet at the same time, likely to make a hell of earth. This very kindness stings with intolerable insult. To be cured against one's will and cured of states which we may not regard as disease is to be put on a level of those who have not yet reached the age of reason, or those who never will, to be classed with infants, imbeciles and domestic animals. So beware of those who pass laws to protect us. In Skvorecki's book, The Bass Saxophone, jazz music is hateful and immoral, and it is banned. Singing songs is hateful and banned. Dancing to the wrong music is hateful and banned. And all the laws that ban music, singing, dancing were laws implemented to protect the state and to protect its citizens. That is, you and me and everyone we know. This didn't happen in some faraway place or some distant time. It happened recently in Czechoslovakia. Yeah, a lovely middle European country where we all go for cheap, boozy weekends. The birthplace of good King Wenceslas. To mere 600 miles from Prague to London. That's about the same distance from London to Aberdeen. Threats to our freedom are never far away, and whenever freedom is threatened, it's worth fighting for, as the author Joseph Ferrecki argues. So the bass saxophone is, if you can get hold of a copy, well worth reading for the introduction alone. And if you go on to read the two short stories contained inside, it might be the most interesting book, the most thought-provoking book you read this year. And if you can't get hold of a copy, get in touch with me and I'll send you mine, like I say. But first come, first served. And that's it, really. I think I'll finish off this week's book focus. Admittedly, a little heavier than last week's look at The Hobbit and Harry Potter. A little bit deeper. Maybe not. With a thought and a quote. The thought is this. History is littered with small-minded, censorious people who seek to reduce and restrict our freedoms and to scold us for ever daring to have a mind of our own. And how they gain power is to persuade us that the other side, and at this point you can insert your own oppositional group, the other side is wrong, the other side is evil, the other side is pernicious, and they offer to protect us from the other by removing our freedoms in order to make us safe. But true freedom means allowing the other to speak, allowing the other to sing, to dance, to exist. And also, true freedom is never safe. The quote, Thomas Paine said, "He who would make his own liberty secure must guard even his enemy from oppression. For if he violates this duty, he establishes a precedent that will reach even himself." And on that bombshell, I'll leave you. This is David Wares with the 15-Minute Book Club, and I'll see you next week for something different.